Coming up on Fronteras, Tino Duran, publisher of San Antonio bilingual newspaper La Prensa, just went public with his Alzheimer's diagnosis.
You know, I've heard him reciting over and over, he'll say, "Oh dear God, show me the way and I will go, but please never leave me alone."
Duran's daughter Nina joins us on Fronteras to talk about her father and the family's journey with Alzheimer's. Imagine traveling the entire Rio Grande, just you, a canoe, and some paddles. A couple of journalists are doing just that.
We'll ask somebody in one town if they know anybody 15 miles downstream who has property on the river that we can stay at. So we, sleep in a lot of cow pastures and things.
We check in on the disappearing Rio Grande expedition. Those stories, first the news. This is Fronteras, the program that brings you stories about the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and changing demographics along the Southwest. Fronteras brings you the work of reporters from several public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. Reporter Colin McDonald and photojournalist Eric Schlegel are on the journey of a lifetime. 1,900 miles, 7 months, following the Rio Grande from source to sea. They're calling it the Disappearing Rio Grande Expedition. The journey all started at Stony Pass in Colorado in late June. These journalists are not driving. They're getting up close and personal with the river, canoeing, kayaking, and walking when need be to learn about the changes to the river and how those changes are impacting the people that rely on it. I reached Colin McDonald on his cell phone to give us an update on this fascinating journey.
Right now, I am in Texas. I'm actually just north of the Texas-New Mexico state line, because the Rio Grande goes into Texas, out of Texas, and then it comes back and becomes the border.
At this point in your journey, what is the takeaway for you?
Climate change has a big impact on the river, and obviously climate does. By far, the biggest factor is the human management of the river. Basically, everything we see is because of a decision that we as a society made.
I know people want to know, what are you eating and where are you sleeping?
We're camping along the side of the river here in El Paso, there's not a lot of places to set up a tent along the river. So we're staying in a hotel. We stay a lot of times we'll ask somebody in one town if they know anybody 15 miles downstream who has property on the river that we can stay at. So we, sleep in a lot of cow pastures and things. And eating, this whole corridor was one of the first areas settled by Europeans, and there are these little towns all along the river. They've been there for 300 years, so we can always get beans and rice wherever we are.
How are y'all paying for this huge expedition?
The project's a bit of a flipped journalism model in that the project is being supported by readers. The Texas Tribune is our publication partner. They're carrying the blog, but Eric's salary and my expenses are being covered by donations that Eric and I raised before we started, and then we actually just started another fundraising campaign to basically keep Eric on.
So where is this all supposed to end and when?
January 24th, we will hopefully paddle from Boca Chica Beach to South Padre Island and have a little party. We'll basically be at Brownsville about mid-January, and then take one more week and then just paddle out to the coast.
You know, not too many people have the time or money to do what you're doing. Has anyone done this before?
The real guys that did the trip that's most similar to us were four students from Dartmouth in 1977. And they're actually going to come, some of those guys are going to come out and join us in Big Bend. It's kind of a reunion. We're going to look at how the river has changed between then and now. 1977 was also a very dry year, but the water use wasn't nearly as high, and there wasn't as many dry years leading up to it. So it's a different situation.
Very interesting. Any dangers or obstacles along the way?
It's been absolutely fantastic. The International Boundary Water Commission has been incredibly helpful in literally opening gates for us. On Monday, we're going to start walking along the border fence, but on the riverside, and they gave us a letter and talked to Border Patrol about what we're doing and why. Really, the biggest hazard has been making sure that I take care of my feet and don't get blisters that get infected.
You can follow Colin and Eric's journey on Facebook and at texastribune.org. There are links and photos at tpr.org to this disappearing Rio Grande expedition. Something else is slowly disappearing in Texas, a lifestyle. This Sunday, it'll all be on display, as arts and culture reporter Jack Morgan explains.
The Institute for Texan Cultures is featuring one of those cultures, Tejano Ranching.
There's a whole culture and way of life around ranching. A lot of the folks that we're going to have on Sunday are active ranchers and vaqueros in their everyday life.
Vaqueros being the Spanish word for cowboys.
And we're bringing their life ways into the museum here for folks to look at.
Also coming on Horseback Sunday are the Charros Completos.
Charros Completos are sort of champion riders, champion ropers, and they sort of take a lot of the expertise that these vaqueros have, and they're sort of the champions in a lot of these life ways.
Their abilities of the horses are just amazing.
Oh, yeah, they're incredible. And we're going to actually have Victoriano Flores and his family are going to be here. They're three generations of Charros Completos. So the grandfather, son, and then his son are all champions in what they do.
This is part of the Institute's Second Sunday program, wherein they price it so everyone can afford getting in.
It's free. Free admission. The event is held from 12 to 5. There's going to be horno cooking.
Horno is the adobe outdoor stove used in Tejano Ranching.
Tortillas, pan de campo. We're going to have music. We're going to have Los Inocentes, which is a guitar duo. And they play the traditional corridos and baladas that are very famous coming from these ranches.
We have more on Tejano Ranching Family Day at tpr.org. In San Antonio, this is Jack Morgan.
More Fronteras news coming up. The publisher of the San Antonio bilingual newspaper La Prensa, Tino Duran, just went public with his Alzheimer's diagnosis.
I think that my father is, he's given back so much to the community, and he's put all of his heart into this beautiful city of San Antonio. And I truly feel that the city in return will embrace him and will be there to support him.
Duran's daughter joins us on Fronteras to talk about her father's journey. Stay tuned. I'm Crystal Chavez with Fronteras. The Texas Education Commissioner has informed federal officials the state intends to seek a $30 million grant that would expand pre-K opportunities. Texas Public Radio's Ryan Poppy reports that would include increasing enrollment for non-English speaking students.
It's been a hot topic amid candidates running for governor in November, how to go about expanding pre-K. But while there's differing opinions on how the program should run, Texas Education Commissioner Michael Williams wants to make sure that Texas has enough financial resources for increasing pre-K opportunities. Debbie Radcliffe is a spokesperson for the Texas Education Agency and says if approved, it could mean an additional $30 million for the state.
Right now, we pay for a half-day program, and not all children are eligible to go to free pre-K under state law. So this grant could allow us to expand half-day programs to more centers or possibly to fund full-day programs.
Radcliffe says that there certainly is a need for expansion. In 2013, there were over 225,000 students enrolled in pre-K programs. That same year, the state had over 385,000 kindergarten students. Right now, under state law, non-English-speaking students, low-income children, and military dependents are eligible for free pre-K. But without funding, many school districts quickly run out of room. Federal officials will notify the TEA in December on whether or not they approve the pre-K expansion grant. Ryan Poppy, Texas Public Radio News.
La Prensa is San Antonio's independent, family-owned bilingual newspaper. The Duran family has operated the local paper for more than 25 years. This week, they announced the paper's publisher, 79-year-old Tino Duran, has been living with Alzheimer's. Mr. Duran's daughter, Nina, is now using her position to raise awareness of this disease Nina is Vice President of Public Relations at La Prensa. We spoke earlier this week, and the conversation starts with her talking about his early days.
You know, he didn't learn to speak English until he was 14 years old. He grew up in the Alisan Apache courts, you know, with just him and his mom. His father passed away when he was 4 years old. And so there were just a lot of barriers that he hit really early on in life, a lot of barriers that I don't want to say most people, but a good number of people aren't able to get over. And for him, he used a lot of that negativity in his life to make something positive for himself. He knew early on that he had to make a name for himself. And so, you know, for me, a lot of my inspiration and drive comes from his story, you know, because I think, you know, there are days I think I have it bad. And then I hear about just different, you know, walls that he had to climb or bridges that he had to walk across. And I think it's amazing. Amazing, you know, learning English at 14, I can't imagine. He got kicked out of 5 elementary schools because he refused to speak the language initially.
For speaking Spanish,
yeah.
Did he teach you Spanish?
I grew up with nannies in the house because both my parents were working parents naturally. And so I just kind of learned because it was the culture that I was a part of. And so thankfully I did grow up, you know, bilingual. But I think that's a lot of it. You know, that he's known for is just what he's been able to overcome. And he wanted to run for office really early on in life. And my mom told him, you know, I really think you should dedicate your time to inspiring and motivating others. And that's just what he's done. He has spoken at more schools than I can count. And it's such a beautiful thing to see students that come years later or even sometimes right after a speech that just knowing that he's instilled some sort of positivity in their lives. And my father's never been one for excuses. You know, he's never been an excuse. You'll never hear him give an excuse. And even to date, you know, that's the way he is. And it's beautiful to see someone just so steadfast in their belief and in their lives. And what's beautiful about my father is that he's allowed a lot of his tragedies in life to be other people's triumphs. He's allowed, you know, he's told himself, and I've even heard him say it out loud, like, God, if this is your will, so be it. Just allow me to use it to bless other people. And I think that's such a beautiful, selfless thing for someone to not mind going through something just for the benefit of other people, to be a vessel unto others.
Mm-hmm. You've been public about your father's Alzheimer's mm-hmm. disease. When was he diagnosed?
He was diagnosed in February of this year. However, we've known for the past year and a half that something was wrong. You know,
how did you know?
Well, when you work in close quarters with someone, so for me being an employee at La Prensa and then going home with my, you know, to see my dad at home as well. I don't live at home, but I live close by. You know, he was getting lost in places where he shouldn't be getting lost. As far as he would call and he would tell me, you know, Mija, I'm right here by Chevron. I'm like, well, Daddy, which Chevron? Right off, you know, Days of All, and he's a block away from the house. Things like that. He would also be very moody. We would notice that he'd come in and yell at us. And then 2 seconds later, Mija, can you do this? And it's like, are you kidding me? You just yelled at me. So different things like that. And then, of course, repetition. He would repeat himself and ask for the same thing. Over and over and over and over. And, you know, initially we thought, okay, it's just old age. But then there was one instance I can remember where we dropped him off at Pico de Gallo for a meeting. So we took him there. I work literally 5 minutes from Pico de Gallo. We hadn't even gotten back to the office and my phone rang and it's my dad. And I hear him saying, call 911, you know, call the police. I'm like, Daddy, what's wrong? What's happening? And he's like, they stole my car. My car's not here. I just parked it. I just got down. It's like, Daddy, we dropped you off. And he's like, no, you didn't. I drove. I'm like, Daddy, I haven't even gotten back to the office. We just dropped you off. And so things like that where we knew, okay, something is clearly wrong because you don't just think that your car is stolen. That doesn't just happen. And so we had him checked out, and sure enough, you know, he tested positive for progressive Alzheimer's. And then in March, they took his driver's license away because he was not only a threat to himself, but a threat to others. And that's probably been one of the biggest battles that we've been facing lately, because now a lot of it is on, I'll pick up my dad, my brother will pick him up, my mom will bring him to the office, because he still wants to come into the office. He's not ready to let go. And it's very sad because he's extremely aware of what's happening. So there's a lot of denial that's mixed in right now. He's gone through the whole, oh, it's brujeria. You know, it's witchcraft. Someone is, you
is
know, someone did something.
Considered the early stages of Alzheimer's?
I think it definitely is, you know, early stages. But unfortunately for my dad, they, based on MRIs that we've had, they have seen physical brain damage present. So once that's kind of diagnosed, then from there on, it's usually extremely progressive. And so it's been, and we've seen it. I mean, he's lost a lot of weight. Having conversations with him now, he's just kind of on repeat. But then out of nowhere, he'll have like a really good day, you know, he'll have a really good day, but it's definitely been, I think, a challenge all around for everyone.
You wrote something that was very powerful online about how you don't really know what something is like, mm-hmm. such as a family having mm-hmm. Alzheimer's, until you go through it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I've seen movies before. I've read books about Alzheimer's. I've heard other people's stories about their grandparents and what they did. And it's the same with anything. It's the same with hearing a story about, you know, someone who has been diagnosed with cancer or anything. You can hear it. You can feel for them. You feel it. But once you're actually walking the walk, once you're actually a part of it, it really is, it's almost like you become part of a club. It's like, oh, now I understand. Now I see how unforgiving and unyielding this disease is, and how it not only tears apart the life of the person that's going through it, but then my mom has become his caregiver at home, and bless her heart, she's going to be 78 this year. My dad will be 80. And for her, it's like she's literally watching the man that she loves just deteriorate right before her eyes. And so it's heartbreaking. And then for myself and my brother, Tino Jr., who works at La Prensa, for us too, there's been a struggle with even advertisers and clients. Like, we've gotten the phone calls like, you know, we give you guys so much money, we advertise, and your father can't even remember my name. And that's when we knew we had to go public with it, because we definitely didn't want people thinking that my father was being rude or just putting people aside. It's he truly has a problem that we're all trying to come through and walk together. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to go public with it. I think that my father's, he's given back so much of the community, and he's put all of his heart into this beautiful city of San Antonio. And I truly feel that the city in return will embrace him and will be there to support him. And I think initially he was scared that that he was going to be seen in a different light, that, you know, they were going to think something is wrong with him, you know. And so, but I'm happy now, because we've gotten such great response already from the city. And it's only been like a week, I think, since we've gone public with
it's
it.
It's only been a week.
Yeah, since we've actually on it.
You wrote that your dad's a spiritual person. How is that helping him cope with his disease?
You know, he goes back and forth, and he's completely honest about it. And as I will be, you know, my father has always been very strong in his faith. I've never known him to stumble. And that's actually been one of the most difficult things for me, I guess, as a daughter, is he's lately he questions God. He's going through the why me phase. You know, what did I do? What did I do to deserve this? And so he definitely has days now, every now and then, to where he's angry. He's angry towards God. But then he'll have days to where, and I've posted this as well, you know, I've heard him reciting over and over. He'll say, oh, dear God, show me the way and I will go, but please never leave me alone. And you can hear the desperation in his voice of he's at a point to where he's no longer afraid of dying. Now he's afraid of living, because now he's having to live with this. And so he'll have days to where he's like, I have faith, and I'm holding steadfast in my God and in my Lord, and if this is his will, then so be it. But then he definitely has days where he's challenged, his faith is challenged. And but I think it's a beautiful relationship that he has with the Lord. I think one that I've even often been jealous of, you know, and a lot of people, he's hanging in there, you know, he's still going to church, which is great, and he's still, on moments when he feels down, he's still praying to a God that he loves very much and that he's still trusting in.
We've heard on this program about growing research Alzheimer's and dementia among Mexican Americans. How do you hope your father's story will impact others?
You know, I honestly think that he's going to be a blessing to other people. As I mentioned earlier, he's always been a vessel, and he's always seen everything, every trial and tragedy that he goes through as the ability and chance to be a triumph in someone else's life. And I think that he's going to touch many people that are afraid. There's some sort of bravery behind, I think, what he's doing, you know, and it's already happened. We've already had so many people that have responded that are just, you know, in love with his honesty and just genuine spirit that he has with it. And he's actually here, I think, within the next couple of weeks, and he's already done two other talks, but he wants to go to nursing homes and to community centers, and he wants to talk to other senior citizens that are going through what he's going through. And I think that's really going to touch a lot of people, because the one thing he hasn't lost amidst this, you know, this disease is his ability to put words together. He still has that. And I don't know how long that's going to last, but I feel like it will be a waste of his God-given talent for him not to go. And we were kind of shaky with it at first, like, oh, putting him in a situation where he's talking. But I think that he will be talking to people that need to hear the words that he has to hear, and need to hear it from someone. He's a patient. You know, they need to hear it from someone who's going through it. That, I think, is going to be really inspiring for a lot of people in San Antonio.
That was Nina Duran talking about her father, Tino Duran's journey with Alzheimer's. Nina's raising awareness by participating in the Alzheimer's Association's Walk to End Alzheimer's the morning of September 20th at the AT&T Center in San Antonio. There are walks happening across the state and the nation. Find more information at alz.org. That's it for Fronteras, the journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region from Texas to California. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations. Charanga Cakewalk composed this theme music. You can find the entire audio for this program and past shows online at tpr.org. Look under the Programs tab. Send us a tweet about the stories you liked and what you want to hear more about. Use the hashtag Fronteras. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.